On this episode of Reverent Babble, we start out with a devotion on prayer. Do we get the true value of prayer out of our daily prayer time? Do we take it for granted? We'll talk about that during the devotion. Also, Parrish calls in to talk some NASCAR, the wet weekend that it was at Texas Motor Speedway, the delayed race that it was at Texas Motor Speedway, and you'll hear in our interview that when we sat down and recorded, there still were during the red flag and didn't have a winner, but so we guessed the winner, and you'll see if we were right. Also, Scott Kendall calls back in, and we talk some Major League Baseball as we finish out the World Series, and we recap NFL Week 7 and preview some games in NFL Week 8. Going to be a really good show. And hey, we got Cody. Surprise, Cody is back for a short segment at the end of the show as we give our live reaction on the way home from the Panthers and Falcons game on Thursday night. Y'all ready? Let's babble. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 24 of Reverent Babble. I'm your host, Neil Huntley, and hey, it's great to be with y'all again this week. Hope you're having a happy Friday so far. The weekend is here once again. Man, that was a fast week. Been a pretty good week, I hope, for y'all. It's been a little wet here and there, but definitely not as wet as it was at Texas Motor Speedway this past weekend, but we'll get into that with Parrish later on in the show. Nothing too new with me this week. Besides Cody and I going to the game, we went to the Panthers and Falcons game last night. You'll see and hear our live reaction at the end of this show before the outro music hits. But let's get right on into the Devo. Talk about some prayer. All right, we're going to kick off the devotion with story time once again like we did last week. Now, this story, I don't know this man personally, okay? This is a story I heard on another podcast that goes along with our Sunday school study that we're doing at church. But let me tell you a little story. So this guy, this fella, whatever you want to call him, old Bubba, this guy, he was in Africa on mission, okay? And part of his mission, he was out there ministering to people and helping them with medical attention, had pharmaceutical drugs and things like that, and were helping people spiritually and physically, okay? He had some natives that were traveling with him to help him guide him from place to place. And they stopped along the journey to rest at night. The guy on mission, he slept great. And, you know, he didn't think nothing was going on at all until he woke up the next morning. And the natives that were with him told him, said, "Hey, look, man, we had to fight some guys off last night. They wanted to get to you." And he said, "What do you mean they wanted to get to me? You know, I could have helped these people. I could have led them to Christ. I could have, you know, gave them medical attention if that was what they were seeking." And they said, "Oh, no, no, no. Not only did these guys want to take all the money that you had and take all the pharmaceutical drugs that you had, they wanted to kill you." And he was shaken. You know, he couldn't believe it. And, you know, he finished his mission. He got home and he was telling that story before his church. And he told a story, and a fella in the pew stood up and said, "What day was that?" And he told him what day it was. And he said, "Well, when you were sleeping in Africa, it was daytime here. And I was out and about on my normal day. And I just all of a sudden could just feel God telling me that I needed to pray for you. And like, I'd never felt that feeling before, that I just needed to pray for you. And so not only did I start praying for you, I called all the church leadership in and we met together and just lifted your name up in the name of Jesus Christ and prayed for you." And that just gave the man chills, you know, that at that same moment where those guys were going there to kill him, to end his life, God was telling people at his church back home to pray for him immediately. That gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. And what's even crazier, you know, the guy that told the guy on mission that, he said, "All right, everybody that was with me that day, stand up and show him that we were actually praying for him." And he and 26 other men in the church stood up and showed that they were the ones there praying for him that day when he was in Africa sleeping while the natives were there fighting those people off from killing him. Isn't that wild? That's absolutely crazy. So that's what I want to talk about, prayer today and the devotion. I shared this story with my youth this past week at church when we talked about the Hebrew word for prayer, which is tefillah. And tefillah, like I said, is the Hebrew word for prayer. The English word for pray or prayer is to ask or beg, but tefillah means to self-evaluate. So when you see people in Scripture praying, they're self, not only are they asking God for guidance and things like that, but they're also self-evaluating. And a really good example of that was Jonah. So give me just a second as I pull up the Scripture of Jonah. So we're going to read out of Jonah chapter 2, but just for context, in Jonah chapter 1, you know, God commanded Jonah to go to Nineveh, and Jonah was like, absolutely not, basically, and he wasn't going to listen to what the Lord had asked for and commanded for him to do, and that led to Jonah being swallowed up by the big fish in the ocean. And we'll start now in Jonah chapter 2, verse 1. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the fish's belly, and he said, I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he answered me. Out of the belly of the Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice, for you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the floods surround me, and your billows and your waves passed over me. Then I said, I have been cast out of your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The waters surround me, even to my soul. The deep closed around me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the moorings of the mountains, the earth with its bars closed behind me forever. Yet you have brought up life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord. And my prayer went up to you, into your holy temple. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. But I will sacrifice to you with a voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And then it says, so the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. But, you know, you would think about the last part where the fish basically spit out Jonah. But, you know, Jonah did some serious self-evaluation in that prayer. He knew that he had, you know, disobeyed God, and that's what got him in that predicament. And he admitted that, and he did some self-evaluation and called out to God and said, you know, as deep as I am, you're still here with me. And he gave him praises. And because of that, he glorified God through that, and God got him out of the fish. Now think about that for a second. Now, more than likely, you're not going to end up in the belly of a giant fish in the ocean. Okay, if you do, you're one of two people, just like Jonah, right? But when's the last time you really self-evaluated during your prayer time, besides just making your wishes known to God? You know, God's not a genie. You don't just go there and ask for something and walk away and expect it to just be done in 10 minutes. God is God. God is the almighty, powerful God that created not only you, but everything that you see on this earth. Okay? He is, was, and will be forever. He's not just a wishing well. You don't just throw a penny in there and hope for the best. You're talking to the almighty God. And the only reason why you're talking to the almighty God is because of what Jesus Christ did on the cross when he sat there and suffered and died an excruciating, painful death and defeated the grave and rose from that grave and ascended into heaven. That way we would have that connection back with God that was slandered early in Genesis with Adam and Eve. You know, when the first sin entered the world, there was an immediate separation from us and God. And because of Jesus Christ, he bridged that gap with the cross. And we have a direct line. We have a direct line of communication with God Almighty himself. And I think we take that for granted sometimes. I know I do. Self-evaluate during your prayer time. Say, God, what do you need me to work on today? And here's a news flash for you too. You don't have to constantly talk while you're praying. You can sit there and just listen too. Now, you're not going to hear an audible voice like you hear me talking through this microphone, but you'll have thoughts in your head and you'll feel peace in your heart about what you need to do that day and how God will use you that day. You don't have to just say some fancy soliloquy like Romeo, Romeo, whatever you want to talk about. You don't have to just say these empty words that mean nothing. How many of y'all have prayed and just feel like it's bouncing right off the ceiling back onto your head and you just cannot focus? Stop trying to fill your prayer time with these fancy words that you heard at church, okay? There's nothing wrong with those fancy words, but fancy words isn't going to impress God, okay? Let me read this out of Matthew chapter 6, verses 5 through 8. And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, that they may be seen by others. So, you know, these people, they just like to pray in public just to make themselves look good, you know? Going back to scripture, it says, truly I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Don't pray just to impress the people around you. Pray when it's just you and God. When you're by yourself, that's sometimes the most vulnerable times in your life is when you're alone. Call out to God in those times. It continues on by saying, and when you pray, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think that they will be heard with their many words, aka, just because you're saying a bunch of fancy words don't mean you're doing it right. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask Him. It also says in Scripture, you know, the Holy Spirit helps us when we need to pray. Sometimes we feel like we need to talk to God, but we don't know what to talk about, okay? It says in the book of Romans, likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know what to pray for as we ought, but the Spirit Himself intercedes for us with the groanings too deep for words. How many of y'all started a prayer time and stuff had just flown right out of your mouth and you know that that was the Holy Spirit and that was not your own original natural thought? That's happened to me several times. When you feel that tugging to talk to God, just talk to Him. Sit there and listen if you need to. It really helps to sit back and listen. I've learned that several times. And if you have no idea how to even pray, maybe you listen to this podcast right now and you've never seriously prayed to God besides saying your blessing and saying, now lay me down to sleep and so on. It says in Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 9, pray then like this, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us of our trespasses as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now, you don't have to say that word for word. You can say that word for word because that's the basic prayer right there, and it's in a really good order. You know, the prayer starts out by honoring God and glorifying God. Hallowed be your name. Then it says, your kingdom come, your will be done. And it says, before I give any request to you, God, may your will be done first and foremost. You know, Jesus prayed in the book of Luke in the garden, the night he was betrayed by Judas, you know, Lord, if it's in your will, take this cup from me. But if it's not in your will, then so be it. I will honor you no matter what. Even Jesus prayed that. But he prayed, Lord, may your will be done above all things. And that's how we ought to pray too. Lord, before I give you any request, may your will be done first and foremost. Give us this day our daily bread. That's when you ask for certain things or you pray for your prayer requests that you have that day. And forgive us of our debts or our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. So, Lord, forgive us for our sins. Forgive us where we messed up the day before. We may even messed up before we prayed that morning. That's extremely possible. But help us also forgive those people who have wronged us. Because, God, you're going to forgive us. So please allow us, give us the encouragement to forgive those who have wronged us. Because if you can forgive us, we can forgive others. And lead us not to temptation, and deliver us from evil. Keep us pure. Keep us focused on the day ahead. Practice. The more you pray, the more you'll feel closer to God. I love just having conversations with God. I pray with him every morning on the way to work. And, you know, when I've heard the Sunday school lesson on prayer the other day, you know, it made me want to enhance my prayer time. So instead of just talking to God casually, I say stuff and say, in the name of Jesus Christ, I ask, Lord, that this happen and your will be done, and all this other stuff. Try some new things in your prayer life. I don't think you'll be disappointed. All right, y'all, it's sports time. Time to update y'all on the week that was in the world of sports. This is the Weekly Score. Kick off the Weekly Score by talking to our buddy Scott with some baseball and NFL. And then we will go on and talk to our buddy Parrish about some NASCAR. Hey, and then at the end, it's me and Cody for a few minutes to give our live reaction from last night's football game between the Falcons and Panthers. Let's get it. All right, y'all, it's time to talk some baseball and football with Scott. Scott, what's up, man? Welcome back to the show.
Yes, sir. Glad to be back.
What's new with you this week?
Nothing really new. Just work, watching sports, trying to work out more now. Shifting away from the golf, trying to save some money and get back in the gym since it's opened back up.
I hear you, man. Yeah. You know, I can always ask you what you're up to, and I know that work and watching sports will always be the top two.
Right.
Because that's been our life for as long as I've known you, so that's the truth.
It's better than politics.
That's right. Oh, dude, that's, you know, I don't bring politics up much in this podcast for a good reason, but, man, that's interesting, and I'll probably just leave it at that. To quote Forrest Gump, and this won't be the only time I quote Forrest Gump in this episode, but that's all I have to say about that. So, but let's talk some baseball, Scott. So we're done with the World Series by the time this podcast comes out. While we're recording right now, Game 6 is going on, and Tampa Bay is up 1-0 in the top of the second. So we're fresh into Game 6. What have you liked so far in this series?
Well, it's just been back and forth. I mean, I predicted that, you know, they would split the first two games, and I think I said that the Dodgers would probably win 6 or 7, and that's, you know, it's been true so far. It's like, you know, the Dodgers have the more talent, but the Rays just seem to be fighting back, because, I mean, especially like in Game 4, I mean, that was one of the craziest baseball games we've seen in a while. I was thinking about that one compared to the Indians and Cubs Game 7,
mm-hmm.
that World Series, and when David Freese had those two hits against the Rangers. Those are like the top three games I think of, but that was like, that game was just about as crazy as that. But now that the Rays have come out and hit a home run in the first inning, it looks like, you know, they're going to win tonight, and then Game 7 tomorrow should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I hope they at least make it to Game 7. I would love to see the Rays pull out a upset, because it would definitely be a definite upset, even though they are a one seed, you know.
Right.
But that was Game 4 with the base running and the error mishap, right? Man,
right.
I was 10 minutes away from going to bed that night. I've already stayed up late playing some kind of Xbox game. I can't remember what game I was playing. It was so late. And I just happened to check my phone and saw where it was, you know, bottom nine. And they were down one run. I said, oh, I got to at least turn to it and see what happens. And then I saw, you know, Kenley Jansen out there. I was like, well, if he does to them what he did to us, it's a wrap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we talked about last week, how one of the basic fundamentals of baseball and base running was what killed the Braves. Basic fundamentals of fielding a baseball is what killed the Dodgers in Game 4. I know it's in the heat of the moment, and that was a crazy, crazy, you know, scenario. But, you know, the outfielder, he didn't watch the ball into his glove. He was already anticipating the throw. And then Will Smith, he was already anticipating the catch and tag at home and completely whiffed on the catch.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, Rosarena's the one, he fell halfway between third and home. And, I mean, that was just absolute madness. And I'm glad I didn't have a dog in the fight with it. I could just sit there and watch it all unfold, because if I was a Dodgers fan in that time, I would have been probably screaming at the TV. Mm-hmm. Or if I was a Rays fan, I'd probably just be, pulling my hair out because I didn't know what the heck was going on. But
right.
if anything is remembered out of that, even if the Dodgers do end up winning in 6 or 7, I think that'll be one of the highlights that they just show over and over in baseball mm-hmm. highlights for years to come.
It pretty much summed up 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. When you have a guy that was brought on, I can't even remember his name. He was brought onto the roster specifically for defense, and they were out of pinch hitters, out of subs, and he had a 196 average this season, and then had to hit the playoffs, which is just typical 2020. Anything can happen.
Yep.
So, but I'm in agreement and in agreement with you. I think the Dodgers will potentially close it out tonight just because their bats can get hot at any time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can be right back in with it with one swing, especially with it only being a one-run score. And I've voiced my opinion about how one-run leads in baseball playoffs are just the most stressful times ever.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. And, we'll go ahead and say that if the Rays won, we can't say we were wrong because we said the Rays would win too. So either way, we'll be right. How about that?
Yep, and something to think about. It's like, Buehler will be pitching tomorrow, and I think both teams don't want to see that happen because the Rays don't want to see Buehler pitch, but the Dodgers don't want to go to Game 7 in general. So it's like both of them are kind of fearing.
Yeah. Plus, we don't need Buehler's pants trending on Twitter like they were again the NLCS yeah. again. he didn't think that was too funny. That was, but I got a good laugh out of it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, cool deal, man. We'll see what happens with that, and should be exciting. It the viewership has been down in this World Series, which, I mean, viewership in sports and TV all over the place has been down just because there's so much on at one time, I think. And
right.
I think a big thing that played with the World Series viewership being down is the games being so late, especially for East Coast viewers,
Mm-hmm. Game 6 is now, if we have Game 7 tomorrow, we'll be on a Wednesday. That's just not really ideal.
Exactly. And it just happened, how they're just trying to get it all in before October is over with and things like that. But, I think with it being at a neutral site, that's an odd thing to watch on TV, which I didn't really care much for because I was just watching baseball when the Braves were still in it. But, with it being the East Coast viewers, especially, people down in Tampa, they may have kids that, want to sit up and watch the game, but these games are finishing at midnight or later,
mm-hmm.
Just like the Game 4, that was probably 12:30, 12:45 in the morning when that whole fiasco happened. But
yeah, all the pitching changes, and usually in the playoffs, there's a longer time period in between each pitch in general, just because, guys want to make sure they get the right call in and stuff. So it drags on, it seems like, but that's just baseball.
Exactly. I mean, baseball is a chess match as is, but playoff baseball is even more of a chess match for sure.
Right.
Well, cool deal, man. Well, let's talk some football. We'll recap NFL week 7 by kicking off talking about our Carolina Panthers. They went down to New Orleans and almost they were literally probably 9 inches away from going to overtime. I would say, that was one of the closest missed kicks I've ever seen. And that was the one of the few times I was thoroughly impressed with a missed field goal.
What impressed me more was, obviously it's impressive that Sly could kick it that far, but the accuracy, he hit the goalpost
yeah.
from that far. That just blew my mind. I thought that if anything, he would have the leg, but it would be wide right or wide left. But he was, like you said, like nine inches away, but it was down the pipe.
Oh, yeah. That was insane because usually when guys try to knock the snot out of it, they either shank it one way or the other, just because mm-hmm. they try to kick it so hard. But, he didn't really change much about his motion at all, and he didn't have to kick a line drive or nothing. I mean, that was a moonshot. And it was literally inches away from being an NFL record. But if y'all didn't see the game, the Saints squeaked out a win over the Panthers 27-24. It was, that was a classic Saint-Panther game. Would you agree, Scott?
Yeah, that's usually kind of how it goes. The Panthers, I felt like overall the defense, like if you watch that game without a scoreboard, it felt like the Saints scored 50.
Yeah.
But the Panthers just couldn't get off the field on third down. I can't remember. I think it was like 12-14, and
yeah.
the Saints didn't punt. I mean, any team that doesn't punt is going to win 99% of the time. But yeah, that's just always how those games seem to go. It's high scoring, but you know, it's always really close.
Right. And you know, I believe the Panthers only punted once, maybe twice at the most.
Yep,
that was a great offensive game for both teams, I believed. But yeah, I left the game impressed. You know, I mean, each loss that we've had, the only time I felt like we really got whooped was the Bucs game, you know,
right.
Where we just definitely, you know, we had a chance there, but we didn't execute correctly. But these other times we were right there in it each time. And, you know, it's frustrating from one point of view, but from the other point of view, it's encouraging because, you know, we have to remember the expectations of this team before the season started, and to be 3-4 at this time, especially giving the Saints all that we could give them and still coming up short, you have to leave that loss somewhat encouraged, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we talked about it last week, how our expectations, I mean, we always, you know, every week we think, oh yeah, the Panthers, we can win this game somehow. But, you know, week one, we were saying, okay, like, you know, what are we going to look like, you know, after week six? You know, we didn't really expect to be 3-3. But you can just tell, for one, the secondary, to be as young as they are, they're playing great. Defensive line, they're thin right now, you know, just because of injuries and stuff. But like you said, it's just linebacker play, really, to me, is the only thing that sticks out. I feel like if we can get a guy that's going to get in there and command that middle linebacker and make some tackles, I feel like that the defense will finally be put together in full.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people – of course, you know, the worst place to go after a Panthers loss is Twitter.com. you know, that very valuable news source. But, you know, people in there were calling for Rule's head or Phil Snow's head. And, you know, we had to remember these guys are still first year coaching staff. And, you know, Phil Snow, he's used to Big 12. And Big 12 usually don't have to play much defense because you can win a game 70-63.
Right.
But he's still used to making adjustments. He still needs to make this defense his defense. You know, we still have some shades of some old defensive play calling here and there. But I wasn't disappointed with the coaching. I was a little disappointed that we only had one timeout to use after that missed field goal. You know, because you know me, a Tar Heel fan, I like my Roy Williams. I like to save my timeouts until the next game, hoping I'll have six instead of three.
Right.
But that was the only disappointing part, was that, you know, after the missed field goal, we had absolutely no chance to get the ball back. Mm-hmm. But to go down to New Orleans for their first time with fans, where they were definitely excited to have fans and to keep up with the New Orleans Saints, whether they're on top of it or not, I wasn't disappointed. And, you know, we got a quick turnaround against the Falcons this Thursday, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I can say confidently that I can see us being 4-4 come Friday morning when this podcast comes out.
Right. Yep. I would agree.
Speaking of the Falcons, let's talk about that game for a second. So the Atlanta Falcons, they did it again. This is the third time, and you know, the win probability thing on ESPN, that's kind of suspect here and there, because it just, I don't know how they base that formula off things like that. But this is the third time that the Atlanta Falcons has had a ESPN win probability of 98% or higher and still lost the game after that win probability was posted. So we know what happened against the Cowboys. We know what happened against the Bears. And now it happened again against the Lions. Scott, they can't even close out a game right.
I mean, I know it's easier said than done, because it seemed like Gurley, like, he was trying to get down, but his momentum just kind of, you know, kept him going forward. But it's just hilarious that they had the right idea. They knew what they were trying to do, but it's like, if you can't not score, then it's just, you got to just clear the board and try again next year. Because, I mean, but, and again, I mean, even though he scored, I mean, you score and you take the lead, but to have what, they had like a minute left, and then they get down there at the 12-yard line, and there's no pressure on Stafford. He's just sitting there for like, it seemed like 5 or 6 seconds, and then the guy eventually is going to get open. It's just, I mean, it's not unfortunate for us, but it's just hilarious to watch, and it's pitiful to see him finish these games this way.
Yeah, because I think that's what makes me a little bit better moods after a Panthers loss is, hey, we're not the Falcons. So
and to see Arthur Blank on the sideline, every time it seems like he's going to win, he comes down there and it's just like ready to congratulate the team. And yeah. Then the camera cuts to him when the clock hits zero. And it's just a Twitter meme the next day.
Yeah, maybe he should just stay up in the suite till after the clock hits zero. Maybe that'd be a better chance. But hey, you know, usually he rides up to Charlotte for these games, so we might see him out there with his hands on his hips again this Thursday.
Sure.
But you know, I heard it on another podcast, and I can't help but just tease the fact that this might be true. I think Todd Gurley may have pretended that he meant to not score, like he wanted to score on purpose, but pretended like it was a mistake because people have done some research and found out that he has a touchdown incentive in his contract.
I can agree with that.
He has an incentive of $500,000 this season if he gets 13 rushing touchdowns or 1,000 rushing yards.
Wow. I'm trying to see. He's got 7 so far, so he's on track.
Yep. So, you know, as a team player, maybe he didn't mean to score, but, you know, maybe somewhere deep down that incentive kind of kicked in his head and said, hey, maybe I can just pretend like I didn't mean to. So,
to be honest with you, if I had $500,000 sitting there, I mean, with the way that team's going,
exactly,
I might do that too.
So. Milk it for every penny it's worth. That's exactly right. But, you know, the Lions almost pulled the Lions in that game too. You know, the Lions and Falcons are very similar in how they close out football games. And
right.
They got all the way down, marched down the field, scored a touchdown with no time left on the clock. And then Danny Amendola had that 15-yard unsportsmanlike after the touchdown, which caused the longer extra point to be even longer, you know. And Prater, we know, isn't the most consistent kicker in the National Football League, but he nailed it, and they came out winning by 1 point. So that was a wild game down there in Hotlanta. Let's talk about another game, Scott, with one of our former quarterbacks and NFL MVP quarterback. Cam Newton struggled Sunday, man.
He did not look good at all. That's probably the worst game I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like to make excuses for him because he's my favorite player. First and foremost, he played awful. I feel like just watching that game that there was never any energy or momentum from anybody on that team. And it seemed like, I don't know, just it's just like the route concepts. Nobody's getting open. You know, nobody's running, you know, like a crisp route. It's just like they're out there just, you know, going through the motions. But the Patriots there, I mean, they're in trouble in general. I mean, it showed Sunday that they are not the same. It is not the same team as it has been the past 20 years. And, you know, that's no secret. And I'm not saying that Belichick can't turn it around, but I mean, they've got some decisions to make on personnel. You know, how do they want to go into the draft this year? Are they going to quote unquote start tanking and giving up players to free up salary cap? You know, I mean, it was just awful.
Yeah, it was bad. And, you know, it's easy to blame the quarterback on any team for a loss. I mean, that's the first person you're going to look to, you know. And it's hard to win in the NFL when you only score 6 points. But it's even harder to win in the NFL when your defense gives up 33.
For sure. I don't think that – I think if Cam would have played a great game, that they still would have lost that game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he could have had an amazing game and they still could have lost 33-24 or something like that, you know. And – I'm right there with you. You know, I've been a fan of Cam ever since we drafted him in 2011, and I'll support him no matter what uniform he puts on. But I mean, if he gets to the Falcons, I might just have to write him a letter and say sorry about it. But I don't know if that'll happen. But you know, it took one bad game, and people have been hesitant about it. But you know, all the hype from Bleacher Report and all these other places of Cam in New England and Cam with Belichick, and then it took one bad game, and all of a sudden it's right back where we started with him in Carolina. They're turning on him.
Yeah, like you said, we're used to seeing that. But I thought it was interesting how the first couple of weeks that it seemed like the national media started to love him, but like he was performing like he did the first 2 weeks in New England with us pretty much his whole career until, you know, he got hurt. Yeah, they were talking about his health that there were, you know, the reporters asked him questions about his shoulder and his foot again. And, you know, we've heard that, you know, forever. People are just trying to make excuses for him. And I'm not trying to make an excuse for his performance, but, you know, the man did have COVID and he was out for, didn't practice for 2 weeks. So,
exactly.
I don't like to make an excuse for him, but as a quarterback, it's all about rhythm. And if you get out of rhythm, it's really hard to get back into it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, hopefully he can come out next week. He's got a big matchup against Buffalo, and he might can prove some doubters wrong. He's done that before, and, you know, I'm rooting for him to do it again, even if he does it with Belichick on the sideline. So then as closing out week 7, man, we had an amazing game in Arizona on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's another one of those four-hour baseball games.
Yeah, seriously.
But, yeah, it was really exciting. I thought that the Seahawks were going to run away with it early. And Russ, I think he had a couple of turnovers there in the fourth quarter and overtime. But the Cardinals, I mean, they're no joke. They've got a squad. And they, you know, they play good defense. Kyler Murray doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He extends plays. And they finally got that dynamic receiver that they've been missing since, you know, Fitzgerald was in his prime. And it seems like Fitzgerald's just out there as a coach. It's hilarious. It's like when they get, you know, in a 2-minute drill. His job is to run the route and find the guy with the ball and run it back to the center.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Which I think
right.
is hilarious, but it works. You have to have that kind of guy on the team. And then the whole Metcalf thing, that was the highlight of the game.
Oh my goodness, dude. I mean, you know,
he runs like a deer.
That guy was so fast, and you know, that was instant meme content. You know, with the guy on the Cardinals, with him looking back, and there's DK right behind him. And you know, I've always heard that DK was fast, and I've watched Seahawks games here and there, but you know, you can't really get the true speed of a wide receiver when they're running certain routes and things like that. But I mean, when he just put it in fourth gear, man, I was just sitting there with my mouth wide open. I could not believe that he strided it out like that and got Buda Baker like he did.
And Buda Baker is extremely fast, but it looked like he was running in slow motion when DK was hawking him down.
Yeah, they actually had Buda Baker's audio mic'd up, and you know, I can't say some of the words that he said on this podcast, but you know, basically he said, "How in the world did that guy catch me?" You know, like how in the world did that happen? Like all of a sudden he was clear, and then you know, basically I think DK Metcalf so fast that he ran to Philadelphia last week and tackled Daniel Jones, and we didn't even see him. You know, it just happened that fast.
Yeah.
But, man, that was impressive. And the Cardinals pulled one out in overtime. You know, the Cardinals, you know, are quietly a good team this year. And people are just kind of quiet on them because of, you know, Kyler Murray not being the quote-unquote ideal fit for a quarterback. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is kind of wishy-washy as a coach. But, you know, they are really enjoying having Nuke Hopkins out there. And, you know, it's some exciting things are happening in Arizona. For sure.
Yep, and like I said, their defense, they you know, they lost Chandler Jones, but they got Buda Baker, they got Patrick Peterson, they got Isaiah Simmons now. I know he's not, just from what I've seen, he hasn't like been a star by any means as a rookie, but you know, he's starting, he's contributing, and he got that interception there, which I don't know what the heck happened. I think somebody said it was like Russell Wilson hit the X button, like, to hike the ball at it. And, like, you know, you rapidly press it, trying to get it before the clock runs out, and then you accidentally throw a pass.
Yep.
That's what it looked like. But to have that instinct, I mean, he was turned his – he turned his back to go cover somebody, and then just happened to look up, and the ball was right there. So that was, like, the play that won it for him.
And that was a classic Seahawks game, too, you know, where they're just, you know, at any chance, they're right back in it and things like that. And that was a classic NFC West game too, especially on a Sunday night where it seems like on Sunday night we're either watching the Seahawks or the Cowboys nowadays. So, but it's going to be a wild finish, man. That NFC West right now is stacked, you know, with good teams where they could easily have three teams in the playoffs this year. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But let's move on to week 8. Like I said, we had the Falcons and Panthers on Thursday night. Cody and I are actually going to go to the game Thursday. Looking forward to that. And
nice.
Yeah, we'll have mine and Cody's live reaction to the game post game on the ride home. We're going to pack up the mic and the iPad and record a little 10-minute convo on the way home Thursday night. Whether we're super pumped or super bummed, so we'll see either way once we get to that part of the show.
Well, first thing I wanted to say about that, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I love Thursday night football more than I love Monday night football. I feel like in my order, it's like there's nothing like Sunday afternoons watching football. And then Sunday night football is king of the prime time. There's Thursday night football, and then it's Monday night football. Because Monday night football, the matchups are – they seem like they're always really bad. It just seems like the teams are never, like, really that good or exciting to watch. And then, you know, you've watched so much football on Saturday and Sunday from college to NFL, and then there's one more game. It's just like –
right.
You know, so I love Thursday night football, and it's always high scoring because you only get 3 days of practice and defenses are tired and they haven't as much time to prepare. So it's generally more high scoring. So I love Thursday night football. I just wanted to.
Oh yeah. And you know, that's a hot take where I can agree with that. I mean, you know, some people criticize the Thursday night matchups too. Like, I mean, we had the Jets and Broncos a couple weeks ago and people thought, you know, somebody will win that game like 5-2, but that was a shootout. You know,
exactly.
that was a really fun game to watch. And yep. And I can agree, like last night being Monday night as we're recording this, I watched a little bit of the Rams and Bears, but I was just not into it, you know? And
exactly.
And the product that ESPN is putting out for Monday Night Football now is, you know, far better than it was last year. I will say that it's completely better than it was last year, especially with Steve Levy and everybody else that they have on there now. And they can, you know, they got nowhere else to go but up. But I think just right now with so much sports going on, which is what we wanted, you know, we got what we asked for. I think by Monday Night Football, I think if it's not our team, we're just gassed, you know.
Right.
Kind of like how we were after the Braves lost in the NLCS. We were just mentally exhausted from watching baseball 7 nights in a row.
Yep.
But, yeah, I can agree with that. I think this is going to be a fun game. And you know, I think the way the Falcons lost makes them a more dangerous team for Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Because it gives them motivation to try to find another way to close out a game correctly, you know. But
right.
It also gives the Panthers motivation knowing how close they were to beating New Orleans that they can go out there and take care of the Falcons, hopefully, one more time.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting today, the news about Eli Apple. I know we didn't pay him that much. It was only for 1 year. But it seems like to me that – and this was something that I – kind of was skeptic about, and not too much because I know that David Tepper didn't go in there and just hire anybody, and Matt Rhule has got a great track record. I love to hire, but I thought if anything was gonna go downhill other than maybe the defense, I thought maybe the culture of the locker room would be a little inconsistent. But I don't know exactly if this is what happened, but it seems like Eli Apple was, there was some little bit of attitude issues. I don't know if you saw that when there was a late hit Sunday, Eli Apple got in the New Orleans defender's face and was making a scene, and he'd been kind of battling some injuries too, but then he was immediately cut today right after practice. So it seems like to me that Matt Rhule doesn't play games.
Yeah, he doesn't, and I know, and I hate that I can't remember the guy's name right now, but we also had another guy that was a defensive back that was on the practice squad. And he was cut today, too, after video surfaced of him hanging out at a Charlotte nightclub where the place was packed and he was having a good time. And, you know, it's 2020, and apparently he was dancing to Soulja Boy, which was cool when I was in middle school. And you were probably – I think you were still in elementary school at that time.
Yeah.
But you know, that video surfaced of that. He was not socially distanced, and you know, in a world where we need to take care of ourselves, especially professional athletes, where they're trying to get a season completed, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to that. And I got to credit Matt Rhule for keeping his integrity and, you know, keeping these guys accountable. And if it costs a guy a job because of their, you know, unfortunate decision, then so be it.
Right, and I mean, it just seems like that the guys are respecting him and they're fired up to play for him. But yeah, like that guy on the practice squad, I mean, you're barely on the team and you're going to go out and you might be the guy that gets Teddy Bridgewater sick and causes the team to postpone a game. And it's like, I mean, if you're on such a short leash like that, like why are you not at home studying the playbook and get an extra workout in? Why are you out at a nightclub, especially on a Monday?
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are you doing?
Exactly. And there's guys sitting on their couches at home that, you know, would do almost anything for that spot on a practice squad, you know, because right. That's some people's foot in the door to be on a 53-man roster one day. We've seen that several places where they start a practice squad and all of a sudden they're dominating on a Sunday afternoon. You know, yeah. So, I mean, if you're not going to take it seriously, there's plenty of guys waiting that would, you know, do anything to take that opportunity. So, yeah. But credit to Rule, I was pumped up with his hiring speech, which who wouldn't have been, because all it needed was some organ music and he was preaching up there. Yeah. But, you know, this guy's got some integrity about him and he don't mess around. He's a football coach and he gives out respect and he expects that right back. And, you know, he took care of some locker room situations today, and you know I was pretty impressed with that.
Yep.
So, but it's going to be a fun game Thursday night. You know, we got two, like I said, both teams coming off a loss. I hope Brian Burns sacks Matt Ryan 17 times, but it's definitely going to be a fun game for sure, and it'll be a fun experience to see that in person too, especially with the limited crowd and how that works and things like that. And Cody and I will be sitting right behind the Falcons bench, and we'll definitely have some fun with that for sure.
If there's one thing the Falcons are better at than the Panthers, it's producing fake crowd noise. They've been doing it for like 20 years, so maybe they'll help out the PA guy a little bit.
That's right. They'll give them the ins and outs of how to produce that, right?
Yep.
Well, cool. Well, let's preview one last game on Sunday. We got one game that's a 1 o'clock game, surprisingly, but it's going to be a showdown at AFC North. It's the Steelers versus the Ravens. And man, the Steelers, you know, you talked last week how the Steelers have impressed you the most this season. And, you know, they went into Nashville and played a really good Titans team and got away with a win there too. And, you know, we hadn't seen the Ravens in a while because they had a bye week and whatnot. But this game right here could potentially determine who wins that division. Who do you see coming out on top?
So, yeah, like I said, I've been impressed with the Steelers. And they just barely squeaked by Sunday after Gostkowski missed that kick, which I don't understand how he's been missing so many kicks this year. I thought he was like one of the best kickers of all time. I think that it'll be – I see that the over-under, they're predicting 47. I think it'll be a little higher scoring than that, especially with the Ravens. You know, they're going to have fresh legs.
Right.
I see Lamar, you know, maybe rushing for a touchdown, throwing for two more. I think the Ravens are going to win. I think that the Steelers, like, they've been scratching so much that eventually, you know, luck only gets you so far. I still think the Steelers are a great team, and that's going to be a really interesting race there in the AFC North. But I think the Ravens are going to pull away with it Sunday.
Yeah, I don't see the Steelers staying undefeated after this game. And, you know, they're not a bad team at all. They've shown several times that they're a really good football team this year. But, you know, if you look at who they've won against, you know, this hadn't been the strongest schedule so far. But, you know, this, you know, sometimes, you know, they don't determine their schedule. They play with the cards that they're dealt, and they take advantage of that. So credit to them. But I do see them getting their first loss of the year against Baltimore. But, you know, I thought Baltimore would give Kansas City a run for the money. And I'm not saying Kansas City is Pittsburgh by any means or Pittsburgh's Kansas City. We have to see how Lamar does when he plays down. You know, that's the big conversation about him right now is can he play good when the team's down? So if Pittsburgh gets out 7 or 10 points, we'll see what happens. But that's definitely gonna be a fun game, and I wish they would send out a tweet tomorrow that Schefter would tell us that game was flexed to 8 o'clock on Sunday, and the Cowboys game was flexed to 9:30 a.m. for a brunch with Jerry Jones or something.
Don't get me started on the Cowboys, you know, prime time games.
I think they just want to watch. We just want to watch it for the demise. Now it's crazy. Yep. But don't get hot sauce in your eye while you watch it either. So
yeah.
Well, cool deal, man. Well, thanks for joining the show again. We covered some really cool topics, and excited to have you back on in a couple weeks.
Yeah, man. Hey, I appreciate it. I always enjoyed chatting it up with you.
All right, man. We'll see you next time. And just to update y'all on what Scott and I talked about with the World Series, the Dodgers did, in fact, close out the World Series in 6 games. Some controversial stuff about Justin Turner and things like that, but maybe we can talk about that a little bit next week. Let's go talk some NASCAR with Parrish. All right, y'all, it's time to talk some NASCAR with Parrish. Parrish is back on the show after doing a fantastic job last week. What's up, Parrish?
Not much, Neil. What's up, man? Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, not much either. It's going on great. You know, after 70 minutes of sitting here talking, we finally decided to hit that red button on the screen and record. So we've had a fun time just catching up and talking life and talking all kind of stuff. And I guess we can sit and talk some NASCAR for a little bit, right?
Yeah. Not much to talk about in the last few days, but we can find something out.
Well, I told Scott earlier in the show that, you know, I went ahead and quoted Forrest Gump one time saying that's all I have to say about that. But, you know, I'm going to quote Forrest Gump one more time to give my summary of the racing experience at Texas Motor Speedway. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
All right, so, you know, one day it decided it was going to start raining. And then it started raining upside down and started raining sideways, big old fat rain and little light stinging rain. And shoot, it even rained at night. And there's my summary for the race at Texas. What do you think about that, Parrish?
Man, that's pretty accurate. That was a really good Forrest Gump as well. But goodness, man, this has been the longest rain delay, I think ever. But hey, at least we're not there at Texas. I think that would make it a little bit worse.
Oh yeah, like, you know, me and you both were talking about even before we started recording about we like to listen to the spotters on Door Bumper Clear and things like that. And I can't imagine what it's like for a spotter right now. You know, where, you know, they have a lot of stuff going on, but their main job they can't do because they're not racing. You know, and I can't imagine how boring that has to be to just be on the ready for whenever, knowing that it's not going to happen anytime soon. You know.
Yeah. They gave us that false sense of hope this afternoon when they were like, all right, we're going drivers to their cars at 7. We're going to be racing at 7:30. And then Mother Nature was like, nah, not tonight. Not tonight.
Once again, not tonight. So for y'all that don't follow NASCAR, Parrish, the race was supposed to start Sunday at 2:30, right? And it did.
Yeah.
With some mist here and there and some condensation on the track, we saw Harvick hit the wall really hard from the slick track. And about lap 50, Bowyer was in the lead. And at lap 53, they finally decided to pull the red flag out. And it's been red flag at lap 53 for 3 days now.
Hey, yeah. And honestly, man, like I saw a tweet from Bob Pockers where if they're not able to run it tomorrow, then – and they'd have to run it on Thursday, obviously, but that would mess up the Martinsville weekend too, because it would move the truck race from Friday night to Sunday night after the cup race, which would be Sunday afternoon, and then it would move the Xfinity race from Saturday afternoon to Monday night. So I do not want to be in the logistics business in NASCAR right now, because that sounds awful.
Absolutely. You know, they've been probably scatterbrained since Sunday afternoon, you know, because, you know, stuff's so fluid here and there, especially in such a year as 2020. But, you know, NASCAR, when you have stuff planned and you have tickets sold now, too, because, you know, I'm sure there'll be a small amount of fans in Martinsville like there were a small amount of Texas, too.
Yep.
You know, when stuff gets delayed like this with stuff that you cannot control at all, you know, this is stuff way out of our control. And, you know, it makes things go crazy for a little bit. And I saw on a tweet just earlier that, you know, they're letting fans in the race tomorrow at Texas if you had a stub for Sunday, you know, and things like that. But, you know, people that have planned, people that don't even live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I mean, just for example, like if me and you decided, hey, we're going to go to the Texas race, you know, that ruined our whole weekend if we did that,
100%. We lost that experience and everything. We saw 53 laps of racing.
That's right. And, you know, and Clint Bowyer world record is in first place for 3 days now. And like you said, when we were just sitting here talking, that's the longest he's been in first place for about 15 years. So.
Exactly. I did see, this is kind of, I guess it's kind of on topic, but I saw a stat on Reddit, the NASCAR subreddit, where if the race is somehow pushed to Friday, which, Lord, I hope that doesn't happen. But if it is and they run it on Friday, Denny Hamlin wins, he will have won a race every day of the week this year.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
You know, I didn't think about that, but that's right. And, you know, I've never been much of a Reddit user besides another option for searching for problems, for solving a problem, you know, with technology or something like that. But I've heard NASCAR Reddit's pretty fun to read.
Yeah, it can be. There are some people on there that are just kind of, I don't know. You take the good with the bad. It's kind of like Twitter, I guess.
I was about to say, it sounds like Twitter.com to me.
Yeah. honestly.
But it has been fun to see how creative NASCAR's Twitter account has been the past 3 days, and see NASCAR Chasm and NASCAR Man and all those, you know, NASCAR Twitter accounts and the DBC guys and things like that. So they've been finding ways to keep them entertained here and there, but you know they're ready to race.
Oh, 100%, man. And I really hope they're able to get it in tomorrow or at least Thursday or something, man, because I think it would be different if this race was like the spring Texas race. Like, I feel like NASCAR would just be like, all right, we can come back and run this at some point when we're headed back out west. But just because it's like, it's such a big race, because they need to run this before they can even think about running the championship race in a few weeks, it has kind of forced their hand to where they have to get this race in, which is, it sucks for the teams and everybody. But I guess if you end up winning, like if Alex Bowman were to end up winning and just making the final four, sure, he'd be very happy with waiting this long for it to happen. But hopefully they'll be able to get it in, man. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, this podcast will be out on Friday morning. Hopefully we'll have a winner by then, and we won't have to be projecting a winner by Friday afternoon, because that would be absolute madness, and that goes right back to the chaos that would be in the logistic department of not only NASCAR, but Martinsville and Phoenix and all those places too. I mean, man, that just stresses me out just thinking about it, and I got too much else to think about than to be worried about someone like that. So,
exactly. But, I don't even get paid to worry about this. What in the world?
Yeah, but you're talking about people like Alex Bowman. If he were to come out and win this race, if they do race, you know, Wednesday or Thursday this week, you know, that's a team that is on outside looking in, basically, and, you know, when they win, they're in, and that would make my buddy James very happy because he's a Bowman guy.
Yeah, and I heard him on last week's podcast.
Yeah, he's a Bowman and Austin Dillon guy. He likes his Chevrolets.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's staying true to that. And, man, he wanted Austin Dillon to do so well at Bristol, and when he got caught up in that wreck where he didn't get the free pass, man, he was not a happy camper for the rest of that race.
And I don't blame him, because that wasn't even Austin's fault, man. That was him just getting caught up in someone else's doing. And unfortunately, the NASCAR rule is, if you're part of the caution, you're not the lucky dog, which I think that's kind of dumb, because that can be kind of, I don't know, if someone wrecks in front of you, you just kind of pile in. Like, that's not really your fault, you know?
Exactly. And I mean, at Bristol, of all places, you're almost always in the caution, no matter where you are on the racetrack.
Exactly. There's nowhere to run and hide.
So, well, let's say this race does start on Wednesday, and we'll be reminiscing this on Friday. I'll go ahead and give you center stage to tell me who you think's going to win.
Oh, man. So, honestly, I know Harvick hit the wall early, and I know I think he's like 38th, one lap down. But apparently, I mean, they were able to come down pit road and put four tires on it and kind of just, you know, pull the fenders away so there's no tire rubs and everything. I think if there's honestly not too much damage to his car and, like, nothing's wrong with the steering or anything, I think he's probably going to win. He's won the last three Texas fall races. There's just something about him and Texas in the fall. So I'd say probably Harvick, but I could also see someone like a Blaney, because he's pretty good at Texas. I mean, hey, it wouldn't even surprise me if, like, a Chase Elliott or Alex Bowman stole it, man.
Right.
Because Bowman, after Harvick hit the wall, Bowman took the lead, and he led up until that caution where they had to pit, and then Bowyer got the lead. So I'd say probably one of those three if I had to pick. But if I had to pick one, like, outright, I'd say Harvick, just because, I mean, they've been the best car all year. A little bit of adversity isn't going to kill him, but we'll see. Who knows? They could all drop off into turn one whenever, and they could all wreck, and Joey Gase could win. Who knows?
That's Joey Gase. Oh, goodness.
That'd be something.
That would be something. And, you know, I think one of the contenders for the championship four had the best shot for the Texas race. I think the wild card winner of somebody that's not even in the hunt for the playoff or for the championship four would be the Martinsville race, because, you know, just how that race had to pace themselves. They get behind, they get ahead, all this stuff. And it's, you know, it's just a Bristol with tighter turns, basically.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I could agree with either, you know, Harvick winning or seeing Bowman or somebody like that winning this race. But I think you'll have a random person at Martinsville win, and the four be the last two spots be set by points and not just by one winner in points.
Yeah, but
it'll be interesting, man. You know, Texas is basically just a wider version of Charlotte. and which is, you know, basically and literally what it is, big screen and all on the back stretch and everything.
Yeah. Can I just want to get on soapbox real quick.
Go ahead.
And Texas, they had such a good track, and then they repaved it. And this has been, for the Cup Series, these last 4 years, has been the most boring mile-and-a-half races. And I am so glad that they are moving one of the Texas races to the road course, the Circuit of Americas in Austin next year. And but I do not know why they gave Texas the All-Star race. If they didn't think the All-Star race was good at Charlotte and then it was good at Bristol, why would they give it to Texas?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, you know, I kind of talked about last week how the race being at Kansas, I wasn't excited going in simply because it was a mile and a half. And I think it's because of races like Charlotte and Texas that, you know, Charlotte's fun because it's the home track. But it, I mean, what if it's not exciting, you know, if there's not much going on, it's just watching them kind of pace themselves.
Oh, for sure, especially in the 600. The 600 can be the most boring race to watch because you literally watch 5 hours of racing and then – the last, all you really need to watch is like the last 20 laps most of the time because there's normally a late rate caution and then there's like pit strategy and everything. And it's like, where was that the other 5 hours I was watching this?
Oh, yeah. My first experience of a cup race that I remember, you know, I went to a few as a kid that I don't remember. Yeah. But the first that I do remember was a Coke 600, and I still have nightmares about that. That was the year that the front stretch camera cable fell into the track. Do you remember that? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so that was a 45-minute delay with that. And then on top of that, that was a six-hour race. Green flag was at 6:30, and Kevin Harvick won at 12:30. And we stayed there all 6 hours. And, you know, as fun as it was, I never want to go to another six-hour race.
No, dude, trust me. I don't blame you. I went to the 600 was always, like, a big race for us to go to because it was a long weekend, like Memorial Day, so we could come down to Charlotte. And, like, my mom could stay in the hotel while my dad and I went to the race. And I remember we went to the 600 in 2017, and it was Austin Dillon won, so it was pretty cool. But, dude, there was a rain delay, like, right before the start of the second stage.
Oh, no.
2.5-hour rain delay. And it was just me and my dad that drove down. So we didn't get a hotel or anything because we were like, we can do it. Like, I'll drive back, Dad. You can sleep. Dude, literally, the race didn't end until, like, 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, like, a three-hour drive from home. So we got back home at, like, 5 a.m.
Oh, my goodness.
The next day, man. It was awful. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. I'm always going to get a hotel. I don't even care if it's a day race or what, man.
Yeah, and I know we got off topic for a minute, but, you know, we got off topic for an hour before we started recording, too. So, but, I mean, that's how James and I were at the Bristol race. You know, that was a fun race, but it got over late, and it was extremely late when we got back to his house in Gastonia area. And, man, I told him, I said, next year we might have to get a hotel room because that was a brutal ride back that night.
Or an Airbnb, man. I mean, those are pretty cheap.
Yeah, something like that. We'll see. But, yeah, I agree. I don't know why Texas got the All-Star race. I think basically just SMI trying to, you know, bounce around, which, I mean, you saw how awesome it was at Bristol with just a small amount of fans. Imagine that place packed for the All-Star race. I mean, think about that, how awesome that would be. They said, instead of that, let's just throw dirt on there. But whatever. That's a whole nother hour-long conversation we could have about dirt at Bristol. But it'll be interesting, man. You know, like I said, who knows what'll happen. I mean, we haven't had a race. We've had 50 laps of a race on Sunday and hadn't had a green flag since. And like you said about Harvick, man, you know, technically it's been red flag, so they cannot work on that car, right?
Yeah. They can't.
Yeah, imagine getting to the track and saying, hey, all right, it's red flag, you can't work on the car. I mean, that's got to be just infuriating for that team.
Gosh, man, especially if it's like, I know, I think it was the 2002 Daytona 500 where there was like a big crash and then like Sterling Marlin was leading and a red flag came out and he gets out of his car and goes and tries to pull his right front fender out. And he was like, we were just sitting here. I was just going to go do it. And NASCAR was like, no, bud, you can't do that. And he ended up losing the race, man. And that was, I don't know why I just randomly thought of that, but that'd be funny if Harvick snuck into the garage and pulled on his fender a little bit. Maybe NASCAR wouldn't see him.
Yeah, I wonder if there's like high top notch security there in the middle of the night at Texas. Who knows? Jerry Jones might jump out of the back corner or something since it's over there in that area. But who knows? But it'll be interesting finish of that for sure. And I mean, talking about cars and stuff getting messed up, my boy Martin Truex got his spoiler taken away from him.
Yeah, that was a big penalty. I mean, it sucks that he was already in, but since he was already in must-win territory, it was kind of like, I mean, we already knew we needed to win, but now it's like there's that even more incentive. Like, okay, now we're in the point where we can't points our way in, which. Honestly, he's good at Texas. He's good at Martinsville. So it's not the end of the world, but it definitely doesn't help anything.
Exactly. I mean, like we talked about last week, he is good at Martinsville, and he's done that time and time again where he I don't know what it is about Martinsville, but he loves it. It's almost, I mean, he's a really good road course driver too, and maybe he just treats that as, you know, just a road course that's shaped like a paperclip. I don't know. But he,
heavy braking.
Exactly. He just enjoys Martinsville, and maybe he just plays it safe after all that happened this past week in Texas, and plays it safe tomorrow or Thursday, whenever they run, and just goes all in. You know, I could see him being that kind of driver where he just, you know, counts this week as a wash and goes all in Martinsville and sees what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen he's dominated, or. Yeah, he dominated, I think it was last fall, Martinsville. And then earlier this year, he pretty much dominated the last half of that race as well. So, I mean, he definitely knows how to get around Martinsville. I think, obviously, starting position at Martinsville is pretty important just because it's one of those tracks where if you're in the bottom, like, second half of the field, you can get lapped in probably, like, 20 or 30 laps, especially if the leader is putting down a blistering pace. So, hopefully he'll have a good run at Texas and can put himself in a good position, because he can definitely win it, man. I mean, I think him and Chase both could definitely win one or both of these next two races to steal a spot away from someone in that final four.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that'll count as our Martinsville preview, because, I mean, that's about all you can say. You know, that is a wild card race of all wild card races. I mean, it goes right there with the Roval too, you know, where it's a straight up strategy about how you pace yourself, where you are at what point in the race, especially with the stages now and how the playoffs are set up, and anything can happen. I hope Truex comes out of that winning, because I would love to see him at least compete for that championship in Phoenix.
For sure, man. And I mean, he's pretty good at Phoenix too. So if he can get there, I definitely think he has a shot, which I feel like every year, the four playoff drivers are always the four drivers to beat at it was Homestead, but now it's Phoenix, which it'll be weird this year with no practice for qualifying. So it's like, you got to get that set up perfect, because if not, then you're probably not going to win a championship.
Yeah. Which I think falls right into Denny and Kevin Harvick's,
playbook,
exactly, especially with it being Phoenix, which is Kevin's favorite track. And, you know, I mean, of all the years for it to be at Phoenix, it's the year where Kevin Harvick is almost unbeatable, you know.
Exactly.
And so that'll just be fitting to see, and it's going to be a fun into the season for sure. But just to backtrack on the things that we talked about last week, you know, we mentioned some things about some rumors about some drivers going to certain teams and all that, and you were right. We were right talking about Eric Jones going to Richard Petty Motorsports. What do you think about that?
I'm excited for Eric. I know I said that his sponsor was going to be coming with him, which that was false, which is unfortunate, because I don't know where that team is going to get sponsorship from, because they struggle as is to get sponsorship before Bubba brought all those sponsors in, and obviously he's taking them all with him. So hopefully they can find some sponsorship. I'm excited for Eric. I feel like he needed a change of scenery. He's always been that fourth guy at Gibbs, and he's always had Christopher Bell kind of breathing down his neck, and it's like he'll sign a one-year deal, and then halfway through the next season, is he going to be back? Is he not? And then he'll sign another one-year deal. So honestly, I'm excited. And what's cool about it is a lot of the 43 gear is just, it just has the number 43 on it. It doesn't have no driver name. So I've already got a Eric Jones hat for next year. I went ahead and bought one on Amazon. That was a Bubba Wallace one that's on sale. So I was like, I'll take advantage of this, man.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. So that was neat. It was neat the way they announced it and everything. And I think it's a good opportunity for both, because I feel like both Eric and Richard Petty Motorsports still have a lot to prove.
just in the sport, and hopefully they can pick up some sponsors and contend next year. And kind of, yeah, I know Bubba has elevated that team a lot this year, and he's got them running the best they've ran in 5 or 6 years. So hopefully Eric can just piggyback off that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm excited to that too. And you know, off performance wise, and you know how big of a team they are, like size wise, I can understand where they could maybe have a hard time having sponsors come in here and there. But just the fact that it's, you know, it's Richard Petty, you think that would pull in something?
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's what's crazy, man. You would think people would want to hop on the Richard Petty bandwagon, but literally I think STP has been the only consistent sponsor they've had. They've been with Richard Petty since goodness like the 60s and 70s, man.
Yeah, because I mean, when you think STP, the first thing I think is Richard Petty. I don't think anything else but Richard Petty, and I see the colors and I see the number. Yep. And yep. You know, I see the number, I think of the cars and Dynaco too, so you know, just all that stuff. So, but that is a completely fresh start for Eric. New team, new manufacturer going to Chevrolet too,
and
new crew chief. Yeah, I know you're very relieved for that. And he doesn't have Christopher Bell breathing down his neck, and he might take that as a sense of relief where he can just be Eric Jones and maybe go out there and win a handful of races next year. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good plate racer. He's a good short track racer. He's a good road course racer, and I feel like those are going to be the track that kind of play into that team's hands, because they're normally tracks where equipment doesn't really matter that much. It's more based on driver skill. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I know he gave you excitement at the Roval a couple weeks ago, because your wife sent me a snap of you hollering downstairs saying, "Come on, Eric, come on.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you don't know about that until now, did you?
I don't know about that, but dang, that doesn't surprise me.
She sent, the caption said, "This is Parrish watching NASCAR." I said, "Sounds like he needs a buddy to come watch it with him."
Yep, I sure do. Hey, man, there's an empty seat on the couch. You want it?
Hey, I'll be up there as soon as I can.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, I'm excited for Eric too. And going off another rumor that we heard, and it's official now. Now we know Clint Bowyer will be retiring, you know, and he will be going on to the Fox booth, and that'll be fun and things like that. But Chase Briscoe is officially announced as the driver of the 14 next year.
Yeah, I think that's exciting for Chase. I think he's a heck of a guy. I love that he's using the platform to declare the gospel.
That's exactly right.
Lead people to the Lord, or try his best to. And I definitely think the Lord has put him in this situation. And I know you listen to the Dale Jr. Download, and just hearing how many times he almost like lost his whole career.
Yeah.
And had to pack everything up and go back to Indiana. It's pretty wild, man. And I think he can be competitive next year. I think Clint Bowyer these last 2 years has kind of just been mailing it in. He's been cashing a check and just kind of waiting until Dave Storehouse had someone kind of in the waiting, kind of on deck to take that ride. But yeah, I'm excited for Chase, and I'm excited to have Clint Bowyer in the booth too. It'll be interesting to have him up there with Jeff Gordon and Mike Joy and them, and hopefully he won't annoy them too much, but it'll be fun for us to watch.
Yeah, when I think of Mike Joy and Clint Bowyer, that's just oil and water, you know, because Mike Joy's so proper, and he's a veteran, and when you think Fox NASCAR, you think Mike Joy, you know.
Oh yeah.
And to think Clint Bowyer's going to be up there with his rosy cheeks and smiling the whole time, that's just lining up for some high quality internet content for sure.
It is. I know Gordon and Bowyer, they have some past history.
Oh yeah,
from on the track incidents. So, man, I'm sure Clint will probably bring that up once or twice.
Oh yeah, you know how he likes to push the limit a little bit here and there. So that's going to be fun to watch. But you know, going back to Chase Briscoe, man, you know, I'm excited for it. I'll continue to cheer for Truex Jr. just because he's just a fun guy to watch, and he's a really good driver. And most of his talking he does behind the wheel, you know.
Oh.
But I can't help but go ahead and say I'm a Briscoe fan, and I'm gonna jump on the bandwagon his rookie year. That way, nobody can say I was a bandwagon when he dominates in 5 years.
I agree with that.
But it's just cool. It was cool to hear your story on the Dale Jr. Download last week, and how, you know, he grew up a Tony Stewart fan and had, you know, the Home Depot stuff in his room, and then had all the 14 stuff. And they asked him what his dream car would be. He said, you know, to drive the 14 car for Stuart Haas, and how Tony told him he was going to do it and all that. That was just, you couldn't help but like be rooting for him as he was telling that story.
Oh, for sure, man. And you could just tell how genuine, like genuinely happy he was. And even in the video where Tom told him, man, he was so shocked, and him and his wife were so shocked. And with everything they've been through this year with their miscarriage and just like the uncertainty of will Chase be back in the 98 next year, we'd be in the 14, this, that, the other. It's a really good feel-good story that I think NASCAR and everybody loves to see. I mean, I love to see it, man. And I'm going to cheer for Chase Briscoe. I think he's a good guy, and it doesn't hurt that he's also really talented behind the wheel, man. And it'll be cool to see him. And I think that Bristol Dirt Race next year is going to be interesting with him in it and Christopher Bell,
yep.
And probably Kyle Larson. It's going to be pretty wild to see some dirt guys be able to try to manhandle a stock car on a dirt track.
Yeah, absolutely. And perfect segue, by the way. I heard that name that you threw in there talking about Kyle Larson. We're recording this on Tuesday night, and you know we're going to plug the Dale Jr. Download a lot, even, and we know that good chance they don't even know we're talking about them. But we love that content that they put out over there. But they're going to have Kyle Larson on Wednesday this week. They had it on, you know, this will be out Friday, and they had him on Wednesday. And this being Tuesday night, I can't wait to get on the mower tomorrow and hear what they have to say. They might have a big announcement out tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I could. That would be, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if they did use the Dale Jr. Download to do it. I did see where Kyle Larson is selling his sprint car team, which I think that's pretty interesting as well, because I'd say his next move is probably signing a NASCAR deal and moving back to Charlotte. And I'd say he'll probably be moving close to that Hendrick Motorsports campus right there near the speedway.
Yeah, you think he might be working for somebody that's over there near Concord Mills a little bit?
Yeah, I think if I had to guess, I'd say he'll probably do all his clothes shopping there at Concord Mills, go to the movies there. Yeah, that's probably what I'd say he'll be doing. Maybe he'll go into Harrisburg once in a while,
There you go. But you were pretty good on your guesses last week, so I'm gonna take your word for it. It's all but written in stone. It's almost like, hey, everybody knows it, go ahead and say it kind of deal. So we'll see if he says it on the Dale Jr. Download. And if y'all want to hear more about Briscoe's story too, please go listen to last week's episode with him, because the story about how he got his sponsorship with High Point and all that, and how his dad ran into the CEO of High Point just on a whim, that's nothing but just God working wonders. And it was just crazy to hear that story.
100%, man. As soon as I heard that story, I was like, that's not a coincidence. That's 100% the Lord put his dad in that position. The Lord was like, man, you're going to go get Mexican food, and then you're going to come out, and you're going to run into this guy, and he's going to help change your son's whole career. That was 100% a God thing, man. And I thought that was so awesome. And I think it's awesome that his sponsor, like, they're a Christian-based company. Like, the founders of that company are believers as well. So that's awesome for them to be able to go to the top level of NASCAR and hope, and just be able to use their platform to declare the gospel.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember right, that whole interaction happened in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so even as crazy as the city of Vegas is, God can work some amazing wonders in Las Vegas as well.
That's awesome.
So,
that's not a testimony, man, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I love that story. And like I said, even if you don't like NASCAR, you need to go find that one episode of the Dale Jr. Download. It's real easy. You can listen to it anywhere, just like you can this podcast, and just listen to the interview with Chase Briscoe. And you can listen past all the NASCAR jargon that me and Parrish understand, and you might not, but just listen to how God works in his story. It's amazing. It really is.
It really is.
Well, that's all I got for NASCAR this week. Parrish, you got anything else you want to throw in before we close out?
Just one quick thing. Jimmy Johnson announced his IndyCar number this weekend. He's going to be the number 48. He's going to be driving for Chip Ganassi, which is going to be weird to get used to.
Yes.
But, yeah, so that'll be neat. Apparently, he's only going to run the street courses and the road courses, just because I don't blame him. I wouldn't want to get an open-wheel car on an oval.
No.
That has ended bad way too many times, even though they got their little aero screen or whatever now. But that's interesting, man. I'm really excited to see him in IndyCar. I follow IndyCar a good bit, but I've never found like a favorite driver or anything. So I think I've got a favorite IndyCar driver, which if I would have told myself in like 2009 that I was going to be cheering for Jimmy Johnson, I probably would have stop watching NASCAR.
He'll definitely give me a reason to watch IndyCar, because I watched a little bit during the rain delay the other day when they had their championship race on in St. Petersburg, And that was fun to watch. And so to have Jimmy Johnson in there next season, I'll definitely have to watch that for sure. And, you know, you reminded me before we close out, it was also announced that 23XI Racing is the team name for MJ and Denny, and Bubba will be driving the number 23 car, which that just has fun written all over it.
It does, man. It does. I thought it was funny. They interviewed Bubba on Sunday, and he was like, "Has that been confirmed?" He was just playing around with, like, the lady that was interviewing him, and that poor girl was like, "I think it has," and then she went to Twitter. People had to, like, back her up and help her, like, that it actually was confirmed. I think that's going to be cool, man. I saw something on Reddit today where they were saying that Bubba Wallace is, the most recognized name in NASCAR, and that people are projecting that with this Denny and Michael Jordan team, that's just going to broaden NASCAR's scope, which I agree 100% that it is. And I think that's exactly what the sport needs. They need a more diverse crowd. They need a younger crowd coming to races because, I mean, NASCAR is always labeled as like a redneck sport, but I feel like some of the most genuine, nice people you meet are when you go to a race, and I feel like they'd be open and accepting to anybody. I mean, no matter your race or whatever, man. And I think this is definitely going to help that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. And, you know, be quite honest, next year I think Chase Elliott will have a run for his money for most popular driver.
Oh, dude, I agree 100%, man. If they can get the Jordan brand tweeting that out, or, like, Michael Jordan, like, doing some kind of campaign for Bubba Wallace for most popular driver, I don't think Chase will be most popular driver next year.
Yeah, the only thing we need to wait and see now is what paint schemes will come with what sponsors and whatnot. And, you know, who knows, maybe the Hornets will have NASCAR-themed uniforms next year too.
That'd be awesome. I remember when the Bobcats used to do that, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they had the checkerboard on the side. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that, man. That was awesome.
That was cool. Well, cool deal, man. Well, thanks for joining us on the show. That's awesome just catching up with you and talking NASCAR and life in general. But that'll be it for this part of the NASCAR segment and this part of the show. But thanks for joining us, Parrish. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it.
And finally, yes, we had a race at Texas that happened this past Wednesday, and Kyle Busch won, but that's okay. He's not even in the playoffs. He got him a win this year, so whoop-de-doo, whatever. But we got a good race at Martinsville coming up this weekend, and I can't wait to have Parrish back on next week to talk about that. Hey, it's time to talk with Cody. Here's mine and Cody's live reaction on the way home from the game last night between the Falcons and Panthers.
Robbie Anderson had a really good game catching the ball. So did Curtis Samuel. In fact, Curtis Samuel scored the only two touchdowns the Panthers had in the game. So he had a pretty good day as far as scoring and everything. But when he's the guy that, at least here recently, everybody's been talking about as he is our number one receiver, he needs to get more than, what, two catches in the last?
All right, well, you can tell by the sound of my voice how the game turned out. We're currently down here in the depths of Uptown Charlotte in the underground parking deck. A little creepy, but we'll get out of it. I got a special guest here. I've been talking about him the whole show, and I'm going to let him say hey.
Hey, guys. I'm back, guys. I'm back at least for this portion of the show anyway.
Yeah, we had a good time at the game, minus the score. The Falcons did end up winning 25-17. The Panthers pulled the Falcons tonight. We were up 14-6. Is that right, Cody?
Yes. We were up 14-6 in the second quarter, and then when we went into halftime, it was we had 14. Falcons had 16.
Yeah. So. I'm gonna give y'all my short summary of the game, and then I'll give you my long summary of the game. You good with that, Cody?
One of the things, Neil, that I told you while we were on the way driving up here was I said the Falcons would either win by a lot, or they're gonna lose by a little. I mean, I understand it was only a one-possession game, but it felt for at least pretty much ever since midway through the second quarter that it felt a lot more than just a one-possession game. I mean, well, plus, com- Well, plus combined with the fact that we actually had a chance to actually come back and win this game because Younghoe Koo, the Falcons kicker, actually missed an extra point on their last touchdown that they scored, which made it 25-17 instead of 26-17. And once you saw that, you're like, okay, this is their chance. Well, what was honestly kind of funny about that to me was just that, like, throughout the game, I didn't really pick it up much until he had his first catch. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. DJ Moore has not been involved in this game at all. And that was like a complete shock to me. And I didn't even realize it until he made that first catch that we just did not get him involved in this game at all. Whereas, you know, well, like, here's the thing. Catches in the last like 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, Robbie Anderson had a really good game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Curtis Samuel scored the only two touchdowns. He had one rushing touchdown and one receiving touchdown on that amazing flea flicker, which was,
that was
exciting,
amazing.
Right?
That was
maybe
awesome.
We just need to run the flea flicker 14 times in the game. I don't know. But, you know, when Ian Thomas, and this is no knock on Ian Thomas at all, when Ian Thomas has more receptions and more receiving yards, it seemed like at one point, than DJ Moore did. I think DJ ended up with more receiving yards than Ian just because of that one big pass play at the end.
Right.
But when you're targeting Ian Thomas more than you are DJ Moore in the game, you might have a problem.
Well, plus combined with the fact that Ian Thomas is your backup tight end. He's not even your starting tight end. That's man hurts.
Right. You mean Chris Martinez, like they said on Monday Night Football one
yes.
time. Yeah, but, you know, Jeremy Chinn had a really good game. And the defense had some flashes. Brian Burns, unfortunately, got hurt there at the end. Haven't heard anything based off what happened with him exactly. We had a P.J. Walker sighting tonight after that cheap shot from the Falcons, which, you know, they don't call them the Dirty Birds for no reason. But, you know, Cody, is Matt Rhule's first short week in the NFL did not go according to plan.
Mm-mm, not at all. I mean, well, like, here's the thing. Where the Falcons were on third down and they didn't convert, but there were two flags, and so that made it a first down, and that ran the clock down like 4 minutes time. Because when they got the ball, I think there was like 6 minutes left, and then they had two third downs, and then by the time the Panthers got the ball back, it was 2.5 minutes left or a little bit more.
Yeah, and those penalties are going to come with such a young defense that we have, but
yeah.
We shot ourselves in the foot too many times, and you know, it just wasn't a good game. And I think that's what makes it frustrating, Cody, is this is one of the many games that we've lost this year. This is loss number 5, which that's fine. They're going to come this year. But I think 4 out of 5 losses have been by one score.
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes it so frustrating that we played so iffy, right? It's okay. That's Cody's dad texting him, checking on him. We're about to leave, Mike. It's okay. We'll be home soon. All right. But we're so close, even when we play awful, that we still have a chance, and it's just it's just right there, you know, because
we
came into this season with certain expectations that it's going to be a learning year, but when we get to that opportunity to take the game by the horns and we can't do it, it's just like it doesn't make you mad, it's just like that's just frustrating. But you know, in all, Cody and I had a really good time, had some awesome seats.
Absolutely.
You know, we were sitting that close to we were on the Falcon side of the field. And so it was cool to see those guys and things like that. And, Cody, we can share this memory for the rest of our life that we went to a football game with limited capacity. We had to wear a mask on, and it was during a pandemic and during the remnants of Hurricane Zeta.
Yeah.
So we went to a football game during a pandemic, basically in a hurricane. So I appreciate the fun, and
oh, yeah,
I had a
man.
Good time with you, buddy.
Same thing goes for me, man. I had a great time. I had a great time. I really enjoyed it. I was extremely happy that I was able to go. I was extremely happy that you were able to go with me. I'm just glad that, like you said, we got to share this time together, and it'll definitely be something that we won't ever forget, for sure.
Absolutely. And that's the good thing coming out of this loss. You know what the bad thing that's coming out of this loss?
What?
The Panthers have the Chiefs next week.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
That's the bad news.
I forgot about that one.
But that's our show, y'all. I hope y'all have a great weekend, and I will see y'all next Friday. Say bye, Cody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Sounds awesome, man. It sounds great.
All right. So here is my short summary of the game. Gotta dry this microphone off now. Hold on a second.
I'm sure that sounds good to their ears. Yeah, that game was straight up doo-doo, Cody. That was not a pretty ball game.
No.
For some reason, when the Panthers play on Thursday night and it rains, we just don't want to play. I guess we're, you know, cats are afraid of water sometimes. I don't know. But, you know, we couldn't pick up a blitz, you know, if it was just handed to us. We couldn't pick that up. We couldn't stop a nosebleed on defense. And for some odd reason, Cody, we had on the Falcons tonight one of the best receivers of all time.
Yes.
And he was left open countless times, wouldn't you say?
He was – one thing's for sure. The Panthers could not contain – Julio Jones to save their lives tonight. I mean, like, which I don't understand, because that should be your number one guy you would look to just keep out of the game plan on defense. Like, here's the thing. If you're going to leave someone open, at least let it be like Russell Gage or Hayden Hurst or Calvin Ridley, whenever he was in the game, because he got injured mid-game. But, you know, but the point is that you can't allow the best receiver to have over 130 yards receiving and think that you're going to win a game. Plus, combined with the fact that the Panthers' offense, for some reason, cannot get a snap off half the time, because I guess they were trying to figure out what the play actually they were going to run was. Because I think they had like two or three timeouts that the Panthers used in this game were because they were trying to figure out what play they were going to run.
Yeah, and that's no new thing with the Carolina Panthers, Cody. You know, this was a new regime this year with a new quarterback, new everything, but I think it's just by the color of our jerseys that we just like to snap the ball with 0.2 seconds left on the play clock. It makes no sense to me. It's one of my wife's biggest pet peeves of you have the play in, you know the play clock is going to be 25 seconds every single time from the down of the ball to the whistle, right? And you can't get the play in and get up there and set up. It doesn't make sense to me. And this is my emotional reaction. I'll think logically tomorrow. And, you know, it'll all make a little bit more sense tomorrow. And we can critique things left and right. But we talk about Julio being left wide open. And, you know, the Panthers, their number one wide receiver, we change who that is, like, based off which way the wind's blowing, it seems sometimes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Tonight, DJ Moore did not have a catch until less than 3 minutes in the fourth quarter. What do you have to say about that? On this episode of Reverend Babble, we have a devotion on fasting. Have you ever fasted? Have you ever known somebody to fast? We'll talk about that and a little bit of what Scripture says about fasting in our devotion today. Also, we have some sports topics to cover. We have NASCAR. We have the NASCAR Cup Championship coming up this weekend. We have some NFL to talk about, some college football, big primetime matchup in the ACC this weekend. And we may get into some other topics if we have time later on in the show. But stay tuned for the season finale of Reverend Babble. Y'all ready? Let's babble. On this episode of Reverend Babble, we have a devotion on fasting. Have you ever fasted? Have you ever known somebody to fast? We'll talk about that and a little bit of what Scripture says about fasting in our devotion today. Also, we have some sports topics to cover. We have NASCAR. We have the NASCAR Cup Championship coming up this weekend. We have some NFL to talk about, some college football, big primetime matchup in the ACC this weekend, and we may get into some other topics if we have time later on in the show. But stay tuned for the season finale of Reverend Babble. Y'all ready? Let's babble. On this episode of Reverend Babble, we have a devotion on fasting. Have you ever fasted? Have you ever known somebody to fast? We'll talk about that and a little bit of what Scripture says about fasting in our devotion today. Also, we have some sports topics to cover. We have NASCAR. We have the NASCAR Cup Championship coming up this weekend. We have some NFL to talk about, some college football, big primetime matchup in the ACC this weekend. And we may get into some other topics if we have time later on in the show. But stay tuned for the season finale of Reverend Babble. Y'all ready? Let's babble. On this episode of Reverend Babble, we have a devotion on fasting. Have you ever fasted? Have you ever known somebody to fast? We'll talk about that and a little bit of what Scripture says about fasting in our devotion today. Also, we have some sports topics to cover. We have NASCAR. We have the NASCAR Cup Championship coming up this weekend. We have some NFL to talk about, some college football, big primetime matchup in the ACC this weekend. And we may get into some other topics if we have time later on in the show. But stay tuned for the season finale of Reverent Babble. Y'all ready? Let's babble. On this episode of Reverent Babble, we have a devotion on fasting. Have you ever fasted? Have you ever known somebody to fast? We'll talk about that and a little bit of what Scripture says about fasting in our devotion today. Also, we have some sports topics to cover. We have NASCAR. We have the NASCAR Cup Championship coming up this weekend. We have some NFL to talk about, some college football, big primetime matchup in the ACC this weekend. And we may get into some other topics if we have time later on in the show. But stay tuned for the season finale of Reverent Babble. Y'all ready? Let's babble. On this episode of Reverent Babble, we have a devotion on fasting. Have you ever fasted? Have you ever known somebody to fast? We'll talk about that and a little bit of what Scripture says about fasting in our devotion today. Also, we have some sports topics to cover. We have NASCAR. We have the NASCAR Cup Championship coming up this weekend. We have some NFL to talk about, some college football, big primetime matchup in the ACC this weekend. And we may get into some other topics if we have time later on in the show. But stay tuned for the season finale of Reverent Babble. Y'all ready? Let's babble.